Chapter 12. The Ammerlin Seat. Suan Sanche paced the length of her study, pausing now and again to glance with a blue-eyed gaze that had made rulers stammer at a carved nightwood box on a long table centered in the room. She hoped she would not have to use any of the carefully drawn documents within it. They had been prepared and sealed in secret by her own hand to cover a dozen possible eventualities. She had laid a warding on the box so that if any hand but hers opened it, the contents would flash to ash in an instant. Very likely the box itself would burst into flame. "And burn the thieving fisher bird, whoever she might be, so she never forgets it, I hope," she muttered. For the hundredth time since being told that Varen had returned, she readjusted her stole on her shoulders without realizing what she was doing. It hung below her waist, broad and striped with the colors of the seven Ajahs. The Ammerlin Seat was of all Ajahs and of none, no matter from which she had been raised. The room was ornate, for it had belonged to generations of women who had worn the stole. The tall fireplace and broad, cold hearth were all carved golden marble from Candor, and the diamond-shaped floor tiles polished redstone from the mountains of mist. The walls were panels of some pale striped wood, hard as iron, and carved in fantastic beasts and birds of unbelievable plumage, panels brought from the lands beyond the Aiel Waste by the sea folk before Arthur Hawkwing was born. Tall arched windows, open now to let in the new green smells, led onto a balcony overlooking her small private garden, where she seldom had time to walk. All that grandeur was in stark contrast to the furnishings Suan Sanche had brought to the room. The one table and the stout chair behind it were plain, if well polished with age and beeswax, as was the only other chair in the room. That stood off to one side, close enough to be drawn up if she wished a visitor to sit. A small Tyran rug lay in front of the table, woven in simple patterns of blue and brown and gold. A single drawing, tiny fishing boats among reeds, hung above the fireplace. Half a dozen stands held open books about the floor. That was all. Even the lamps would not have been out of place in a farmer's house. Suan Sanche had been born poor in Tyr, and had worked on her father's fishing boat, one just like the boats in the drawing, in the delta called the Fingers of the Dragon, before ever she dreamed of coming to Tar Valon. Even the nearly 10 years since she had been raised to the seat had not made her comfortable with too much luxury. Her bedchamber was more simple still. 10 years with the stole, she thought. Nearly 20 since I decided to sail these dangerous waters. And if I slip now, I'll wish I were back hauling nets. She spun at a sound. Another Aes Sedai had slipped into the room, a copper-skinned woman with dark hair cut short. She caught herself in time to keep her voice steady and say only what was expected. "Yes, Lyanna?" The Keeper of the Chronicles bowed, just as deeply as she would had others been present. The tall Aes Sedai, as tall as most men, was second only to the Ammerlin in the White Tower, and though Suan had known her since they were novices together, sometimes Lyanna's insistence on upholding the dignity of the Ammerlin seat was enough to make Suan want to scream. "Varen is here, Mother, asking leave to speak with you. I have told her you are busy, but she asks—" "Not too busy to speak to her," Suan said. Too quickly, she knew, but she did not care. "Send her in. There's no need for you to remain, Lyanna. I will speak to her alone." A twitch of her eyebrows was the Keeper's only sign of surprise. The Ammerlin seldom saw anyone, even a queen, without the Keeper present. But the Ammerlin was the Ammerlin. Lyanna bowed her way out, and in moments Varen took her place, kneeling to kiss the great serpent ring on Suan's finger. The brown sister had a good-sized leather sack under her arm. "Thank you for seeing me, Mother," Varen said as she straightened. "I have urgent news from Falma, and more. I scarcely know where to begin."
"Begin where you will," Suan said. "These rooms are warded in case anyone thinks to use childhood tricks of eavesdropping."
Varen's eyebrows lifted in surprise, and the Ammerlin added,
"Much has changed since you left. Speak."
"Most importantly, then, Randall Thor has proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn."
Suan felt a tightness loosen in her chest.
I hoped it was he, she said softly. I have had reports from women who could only tell what they had heard, and rumors by the score come with every trader's boat and merchant's wagon, but I could not be sure. She took a deep breath. Yet I think I can name the day it happened. Did you know the two false dragons no longer trouble the world?
I had not heard, Mother. That is good news.
Yes. Mazrim Time is in the hands of our sisters in Saldaya, and the poor fellow in Haddon Merk, the light have pity on his soul, was taken by the tyrants and executed on the spot. No one even seems to know what his name was. Both were taken on the same day and, according to rumor, under the same circumstances. They were in battle and winning when suddenly a great light flashed in the sky and a vision appeared, just for an instant. There are a dozen different versions of what it was, but in both cases the result was exactly the same. The false dragon's horse reared up and threw him. He was knocked unconscious, and his followers cried out that he was dead and fled the field, and he was taken. Some of my reports speak of visions in the sky at Falma. I'll wager a gold mark to a week-old Delta perch. That was the instant Rand Althor proclaimed himself.
The true dragon has been reborn, Varen said almost to herself. And so the pattern has no room for false dragons anymore. We have loosed the dragon reborn on the world. The light have mercy on us.
The Ammerlin shook her head irritably. We have done what must be done. And if even the newest novice learns of it, I will be stilled before the next sunrise, if I'm not torn to pieces first. Me and Moiraine and Varen, and likely anyone thought to be a friend of ours as well. It was not easy to carry on so great a conspiracy when only three women knew of it, when even a close friend would betray them and consider it a duty well done.
Light, but I wish I could be sure they would not be right to do it.
At least he is safely in Moiraine's hands. She will guide him and do what must be done. What else have you to tell me, daughter? For answer, Varen placed the leather sack on the table and took out a curled gold horn with silver script inlaid around its flaring bell mouth. She laid the horn on the table, then looked to the Ammerlin with quiet expectation. Siouan did not have to be close enough to read the script to know what it said. Tiami Aven Moradin is signed of Vaden. The grave is no bar to my call.
The Horn of Valair? She gasped. You brought that all the way here across hundreds of leagues with the hunters looking everywhere for it? Light, woman! It was to be left with Rand Althor.
I know, Mother, Varen said calmly. But the hunters all expect to find the horn in some great adventure, not in a sack with four women escorting a sick youth. And it would do Rand no good.
What do you mean? He is to fight Tarman Gaiden. The horn is to summon dead heroes from the grave to fight in the last battle. Has Moiraine once again made some new plan without consulting me?
This is none of Moiraine's doing, Mother. We plan, but the wheel weaves the pattern as it wills. Rand was not first to sound the horn. Matrim Cawthon did that, and Matt now lies below, dying of his ties to the Shadar Logoth dagger, unless he can be healed here.
Siouan shivered. Shadar Logoth, that dead city so tainted that even Trollocs feared to enter, and with reason. By chance a dagger from that place had come into young Matt's hands, twisting and tainting him with the evil that had killed the city long ago, killing him.
By chance? Or by the pattern?
He is Taviran, too, after all. But Matt sounded the horn. Then,
so long as Matt lives, Varen went on, the Horn of Valair is no more than a horn to anyone else. If he dies, of course, another can sound it and forge a new link between man and horn.
Her gaze was steady and untroubled by what she seemed to be suggesting.
Many will die before we are done, daughter.
And who else could I use to sound it again? I'll not take the risk of trying to return it to Moiraine now. One of the Gaidin, perhaps. Perhaps. The pattern has yet to make his fate clear.
Yes, Mother. And the horn?
For the moment, the Ammerlin said finally, We will find some place to hide this where no one but we two know. I will consider what to do after that.
Varen nodded. As you say, Mother.
Of course, a few hours will make one decision for you.
Is that all you have for me? Siouan snapped. If it is, I have those three runaways to deal with.
There is the matter of the Shan Chan, Mother.
What of them? All my reports say they have fled back across the ocean, or to wherever they came from.
It seems so, Mother. But I fear we may have to deal with them again.
Varen pulled a small leather notebook from behind her belt and began leafing through it.
They spoke of themselves as the forerunners, or those who come before, and talked of the return and of reclaiming this land as theirs. I've taken notes on everything I heard of them, only from those who actually saw them, of course, or had dealings with them.
Varen, you are worrying about a lionfish out in the Sea of Storms, while here and now the silver pike are chewing our nets to shreds.
The brown sister continued turning pages.
An apt metaphor, Mother, the lionfish. Once I saw a large shark that a lionfish had chased into the shallows, where it died.
She tapped one page with a finger.
Yes, this is the worst. Mother, the Shan Chan use the One Power in battle. They use it as a weapon.
Siouan clasped her hands tightly at her waist. The reports the pigeons had brought spoke of that, too. Most had only second-hand knowledge, but a few women wrote of seeing for themselves, the power used as a weapon. Even dry ink on paper carried an edge of hysteria when they wrote of that.
That is already causing us trouble, Varen, and will cause more as the stories spread and grow with the spreading. But I can do nothing about that. I am told these people are gone, daughter. Do you have any evidence otherwise?
Well, no, Mother, but
until you do, let us deal with getting the silver pike out of our nets before they start chewing holes in the boat, too.
With reluctance, Varen closed the notebook and tucked it back behind her belt.
As you say, Mother. If I might ask, what do you intend to do to Nynaeve and the other two girls?
The Amyrlin hesitated, considering.
Before I am done with them, they will wish they could go down to the river and sell themselves for fish bait.
It was the simple truth, but it could be taken in more than one way.
Now, seat yourself, and tell me everything those three have said and done in the time they were with you. Everything.